This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is August 7th, 1981. The interview is taking place in the home of Sigurda Omot and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. What is your full name, please?
Sigurda Haug Omot.
And is Haug your maiden
name? Maiden name.
Mm-hmm. How do you spell that?
I'm not a good speller. It's H-A-U-G.
Uh-huh. And when were you born?
In 1908.
And what was the month and the day?
July. And I don't want to say the date because I don't want all those birthday cards.
Okay, that's fine. And where were you born?
I was born in Samnanger.
Samnanger, and can you spell that too?
I don't know. It's S-A-M. N A G E R. I don't know if I say the G right.
That's fine. It's two N's. Samnanger.
No, that's one M and one N.
Oh, the M comes first and then the N?
Yeah. Samnanger.
Okay. And whereabouts is that in Norway?
That is not too far from Bergen. I don't know how many miles.
North or south of Bergen? Or
there will be south of Bergen.
South of Bergen.
I don't know how many miles.
Uh-huh.
But they only lived there a very short time.
Oh, uh-huh. Is that a coastal area?
No, that is a mountain area. Up in the mountain. Be up in the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Haug. Be up in the mountain.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, Haug. Haug. What does Haug mean?
A hill.
Oh, uh-huh.
Big hill.
Uh-huh. That's how you got your family name?
Yeah.
Yeah. What were your parents' names?
That are so long. I can't spell it anyway. My mother's name was Madile Ranghilde Engelsdotter Dragade.
Oh, will you say it just one more time?
Madile Ranghilde Engelsdotter Dragade.
And your father's name?
Was Ragnhild, with two E's, Ragnhild Johan Haug.
And what was your father's occupation?
I don't know much about that. I was so teeny, but he was working in a factory where they made butter.
Butter?
Or margarine.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say you didn't live in Samnanger very long.
No, I don't remember very well, but I think I lived there 4 years, or maybe five. I'm not sure of that one.
And then where did you move to?
My mother moved first. My father died when I was a year old, and my mother had to go to work. She owned half of the farm, but that wasn't enough to take care of four. She had three girls. That's all we were, three girls.
What were your sisters' names?
The oldest one was Margit. And the second one was Magdalena, and she lives in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret lives back in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had to move. She moved to Os, which is way across the fjord, much closer to Bergen, about 3 miles out from Bergen. And she worked in the factory there. She had lots of shares in that factory. So she got a good job there, and eventually got to be the bestyrerinde. I wouldn't know what you would call that here. Head of it.
Oh, what type of factory was it?
That was, they canned bristling, and they made sardine boxes, the bristling and mussa and herring.
Mm-hmm.
And they packed them, and some of the boxes that we over here in this country, King Olaf is one of them.
Oh, yes.
But that factory is gone now. It's no more.
Do you remember your grandparents at all?
No, I really don't. I just know what I hear my other sister talk about.
What did they say? What did she say?
My grandfather on father's side, he had sailed all the seven seas. He was very, very advanced for his age. I mean, different thoughts and different ideas. My grandmother was a typical farm woman, very modest, very, didn't say very much, and were dressed mostly in black and dark clothes, and very, very neat. That's what my sisters tell me.
And then you're on your mother's side, you don't remember?
My mother's side, my grandmother died long before I was born, before any of us were born. In fact, before my mother was married. And my grandfather, we never saw him either. He died too, very early. And my mother was from a very wealthy family, and they got poorer and poorer and poorer. She was just about beggars by the time she was born.
Why? Why did that happen, that they got poorer? Do you know? What?
No, there was some kind of a trouble with, I hate to say this, Swedish something or other, that got the best of their family.
I see.
I don't know that, but they were never explained to us, and we never did care.
Now, your family, now your name...
I was going to say one more thing, though.
Okay.
About my old grandfather, mother and mother's side. She had a beautiful, genuine gold crown, those that the brides have, you know, beautiful crown. And a man come and saw cloth, and they were so hard to get in those days. And he gave mother a bolt of cloth for the crown. And now the crown are on the exhibition in Bergen.
That very same crown?
Very same crown. Because we could never prove nothing. Oh. How can you prove anything in those days?
Yeah. And she needed the cloth so badly that she traded her crown?
Yeah, that was the last thing she had of a wealthy, real back family. Mm-hmm.
Now, they just wear those crowns in a certain part of Norway, don't they? Isn't that...
Yeah, well, I don't know where my grandmother's family really lived. We didn't pay enough attention to it. We never really got hold of it, and they're all dead now. Nobody can tell us.
Yeah.
But... that was in the middle part of Norway, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you say Haug means hill.
Yeah.
And your married name, Åmot, what does that mean?
Åmot, that means where a river come down and kind of goes in a circle before they start going farther down, like a pool or something.
Oh.
They call it
It's a little pool in the bend in the river?
Yeah, kind of a bigger pool. It's quite big. They can stand two houses around it, or maybe three. Is the pool and mot. I guess the whole thing means that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, did your husband come from a place like that was named that because it was by a river?
Yeah, he come from Åmot, where the river... went around and
let's see. Okay, so you, when you were small, you moved to a place closer to Bergen.
Called Oseren. Oseren was the name of it. Just a teeny little village. And then Os was the whole community.
Mm-hmm. And that, is that on the sea, on the ocean?
Yeah, that is on the sea. The fjord that goes past there is Bjørnefjord.
What do you remember about growing up in that place?
Oh, a lot. When I was 7 years old, I watched the doctor's wife swim. She did a breaststroke, you know. And I wanted so bad to swim. Not very many could swim there. So I took Ed and her, went out there in a place called Mopersvik, and was a lot of green, beautiful water and nice white bottom. I started swimming there, and by gosh, if I didn't learn it by myself.
You taught yourself to swim?
Yeah.
Wasn't the water very cold?
Yeah, that was seawater. It was very cold, but we were used to cold. So there's a big island way out in the fjord. They call it Red Rauholmane. That means Red Island. And I thought, I'm going to swim out there like a crazy kid.
How old were you, do you think?
7 and a half. I swam out there. And I got to the island, there was these rocks were covered with barnacles. And before I could get into the island, you know. So I climbed up on a rock and got scratched and everything. So I decided, it was just so it's from you over there to the island itself, but I decided it's not. I was sitting there, resting. And I thought, gee, did I really swim that far? And then when I swam back, I was awfully, awfully tired, but I made it. And so as soon as I come up on the shore, the man that take care of boats coming in and boats going out and all. He was a little chunky guy with a very red face. He was hopping up and down and said, "You should have a spanking of your life. I wish I could spank you. The nerve of you, a grown man can't swim that far. What's the matter with you?" Oh, my boy, so I went home crying. Got home to my mother, I got a licking. I never forget that one.
How far did you swim, do you think?
I haven't got the slightest idea that no man has swimmed out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I did it. And I didn't dare mention it later on either, but I got to be quite a good swimmer in breaststroke, mm-hmm. that is, but I don't know the Australian crawl.
Yeah. What did you go to school there? What was your schooling like?
We had an excellent teacher in the last grade. In the first grade, it was just medium teachers and so on. And I was 2 years younger in my whole class. So I was only 5 years old when I went to school there, mm-hmm. and the rest were 7. But I loved school. And when I was in the last class, this sounds like bragging. I don't know if I can say that about myself.
Go ahead.
Well, anyway, I was the best in the class. And I loved school. And then in the village we lived there, Baker was the wealthiest man there. And after him come the police, and then come the postmaster, and then come the priest was the last one to come. It was, yeah, well, anyway, they were the very wealthy people there. And Baker come to my mother and say he would send me to college if she let him, she could pay him eventually, you know. Mm-hmm. My mother said, "No, I never in my life borrowed anything, and I never will so long as I live. We are going to get along the way we can. The world don't owe us living," she said, "and we are not going to take any." Mm-hmm. That was her principles.
Do you think a lot of Norwegian people feel that way?
No. I'm sorry to say no.
So, what happened in your teenage years now? You grew up there, you'd been going to school, and did you go to work, or?
Yeah, I worked in a restaurant when I was 13 years old, because they wasn't so particular there, and that was fun. Then I went in the cannery factory where my mother was until I married.
Uh-huh. What kind of work did you do in the factory?
I was packing sardines in boxes. We worked on a cord. The faster you worked, the more you made. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you, what was that work like? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it.
You did?
And, you know, my hands now, I think of it. Then they were dipped in olive oil all the time, and we all had beautiful hands. But, you know, that goes away when you get away from it. So, I loved that job. Then I married, and...
How did you meet your husband, then?
Well, he was living there. I am divorced. I was divorced. This is my second husband. Mm-hmm. My first husband's name was Nordstrom.
Nordstrom.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we decided to go to America, and we got our paper, and my baby was born before we got the paper, and I decided to go anyway with the baby.
Why did you decide to go to America? Why?
Well, I wanted to go to Australia, but my husband, at that time, he didn't want to go to Australia. He would rather go to America, because there was so little money back home, so little work. I couldn't see it that way, that they lived so poorly, everybody had to scrap and save, and still didn't have the necessity. Mm-hmm. It was really poor in those days. Very, very little work. Mm-hmm. So, I wanted so bad to go to Australia, but...
How did you hear about Australia?
Oh, we read it in school. We know all about the country. We know all about America, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, we learn all that. The school, our teacher, the last one, he was an excellent teacher. I don't think they've come any better. Mm-hmm. So, we learned that, all that.
So, you and your husband how old was your baby? Was this a son or a daughter?
Three-month-old
boy.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Robert. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you set off for America. How did your trip go? Where did you leave from? And
we leave from Bergen. And we went abroad the Bergen's Fjord. And we come abroad and we got a nice, what do you call it now? You place to sleep, what do you call them?
Stateroom?
Yeah, we got a nice little stateroom. There were four beds And two, me and my husband was in one, and then was a kind of a thing, of, and then was the other wife and husband in the other. But we had a baby also. Mm-hmm. So, but we were treated very, very nice. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how much your passage cost?
No.
And what did you feel when you were leaving Norway? How did you feel? Did you have any special feelings?
Yeah, I felt awfully funny about looking at my mother. I thought I hope to see her again. And she was crying all the time.
Did she want you to go, or...?
No. But we had to go. It was no work. Mm-hmm. I could work in a factory, but there wouldn't have been enough for all of us to live on. Mm-hmm. My husband lost his job. Mm-hmm. They closed it up. It was no more.
Yeah.
So, we came over, and I loved the trip across the ocean.
Yeah.
It was terrific, stormy, and everybody was throwing up except me. I was so used to the water.
Uh-huh.
From childhood.
Had you been on boats quite a lot?
In childhood? Yeah, I was on a little boat they called... teeny little boats with they go out fishing, you know. They have one coupe down there, in there, and that's all. And I went on lots of them and was used to it. Anyway, and across the ocean, most of the ladies were throwing up and the men was throwing up and the coffee pot went from one end of the table, dumped to the other end, and I was sitting there, and another man, my husband got deadly sick too, and he also helped take care of the baby, so I could go up alone. And we called Kellner, that's the waiter, he said, "Honey, what can you survive when the rest is down there?" So I said, "Gee, I love this." But he said, "Don't you dare go out to the railing." So I did.
Was it quite rough?
Yeah, they were watered up and down and up and down. And everything was loose, slid over, and they lost a lot of things in the sea.
Oh.
It slid out.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 3 days of this. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And the baby didn't get sick either.
What, you came in 1929. What month was that? Do you remember?
In December.
In the winter?
Right before Christmas.
Right before Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, when we come to Ellis Island, when I see the Statue of Liberty, oh, I feel so funny, like I come to a different world. It was beautiful,
mm-hmm.
beautiful. Then in Ellis Island, I was completely worn out because I nursed my baby, you know. And they put me on a bed and the baby next to me on a little crib. And I guess I was sleeping all that day.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't wake me, they were so nice. And my husband said they wouldn't let him come in there.
Mm-hmm. How long were you on Ellis Island then?
3 days.
Uh-huh.
And boy, were they nice to me.
Now, what kind of people talked to you? Did you? Were there people there who could speak Norwegian? Or?
No, they were English and they used to make signs and I agreed. I didn't know what they said. And then when we come from Ellis Island, we come into New York. There was a man that could speak Norwegian. And he told us and helped us where to go. We had money. The immigrant didn't come to America from Norway anyway. You were completely examined in Bergen by an American doctor. And he looked at your teeth, your body and everything. And then he wrote on the slip.
That was back in Norway that happened?
That was in Bergen. The American doctor looked all us all over. And then we had to have so much money. We had to have $300, which is a lot of crowns in those days.
Yeah. Now, did you have to save up before you came then?
Oh, yeah.
How long did you plan your trip before you came?
A year and a half before I had a baby, you know. Long before I had a baby.
Uh-huh.
And we had the money enough to take care of ourselves when we come to America. America wasn't going to do anything for us. We had to know and take care of ourselves. And I went to my sister. I had come here a year before, Magdalena. So we come to her.
Now, Magdalena had moved to Tacoma?
She lived in Tacoma when we come. She had come from Norway to Tacoma a year before me.
Why did she come to Tacoma?
Her husband had been in Tacoma for 5 years and he wrote for her to come, to please come.
So you knew that when you came that you would be coming to Tacoma?
Yeah, sure. And so we come to Magdalena. Of course, we still had to have our money. So in New York, well, this man that talked Norwegian, he told us to hang on to our money very carefully and be careful. But in Norway, they had told us, especially me, if they hang on to the baby or somebody, we steal him. And they were foolish not to think it. believe it. So I was hanging on to that baby. I was so scared.
You were scared.
He was foolish. And then when we were come on the train, there was a Danish woman, a very nice lady. I think she must have been wealthy. She looks so well bred and everything. She wanted to hold my baby because she looked. There was a thought. Oh no, I wouldn't let her.
You were still frightened.
Stupid,
than that.
So
what did you bring with you? Did you bring a lot of possessions and things?
No, we could just bring so much. I brought some Rosemalt Tina, they called it. I don't know, you know what that is.
Yeah, I know.
And that they lost here somewhere.
It's a little traveling box, is it?
Yeah, the one that you used to bring rummagrut in to the lady who's going to have a baby. I can't explain how it is, but...
Now, what did you say? You used to take rummagrut to pregnant women in that? Or?
Yeah, they used to. I didn't, though, but they used to. No, that isn't Tina, that's Amber. Amber. Mm. Amber, that's what I call it. I forget. Anyway, we come on the train. I couldn't say nothing else but sandwiches. So that's it. We eat sandwiches all the way to Tacoma.
Did they have a dining car on the train or someplace?
And yeah.
Sandwiches.
Yeah. I didn't dare go in the dining room. We didn't dare move from where we are. They come through the place with a man was selling coffee and one was selling sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And the coffee was sweet and oh, I hated it. Can't stand sweet coffee.
Mm.
And I thought, gee, haven't they got better coffee?
were they the same kind of sandwiches you were used to in Norway, or?
Well, you said sandwiches, that's all I could say.
Yeah.
So I think I got peanut butter sandwich, and I thought it was goat cheese, but it wasn't. And then we got, I think, egg sandwiches. Those two things were all we got.
What do you remember about the trip coming across the country? Does anything stand out besides the actual, about the scenery? Did you think?
Oh, yes. Pennsylvania. Oh, I thought it was the most beautiful place I ever seen. It's just like a picture postcard.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful farms. And I liked Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. Colored mountains and stuff. And I liked Montana. With the wasn't it there where the tumbleweed comes?
Mm-hmm.
I love that too, but and when I come to Washington, it looks so much like Norway. So I love the whole trip, beautiful trip.
When you got to Tacoma, you thought it looked like Norway a little bit?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How does it look the same?
Well, the mountains and the green trees mostly, mm-hmm. and there were river. I saw the river there. I didn't see a waterfall then because we didn't go into the mountains. The train, at least we didn't see any waterfall. So I was wondering if they didn't have any waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they did. They know, but now I know. So,
what?
One thing that struck me when I come to America more than anything, people, they were so wonderful. People were so wonderful in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you mean? What was wonderful?
Friendly and nice and smiling. Anyone. The only one that was a little bit more stuck up, I thought, was the Indians. They didn't smile very much, and they kind of didn't seem to like us very much.
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest, the Germans, the English, the Spanish, the black, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Were you weren't used to seeing so many different kinds of people.
I had never seen black people before. But I know about them, I read about them, I learned about them in school,
mm-hmm.
so I know they were there.
So you got to Tacoma, and then did you go right to stay with your sister? Or?
Yeah, and the first day and night we slept all through. We were so completely exhausted.
Where did she live in Tacoma?
We lived out 52nd in South Tacoma, 52nd, and I forgot what other street was now.
Now that was kind of out in the country in those days, wasn't it?
No, there was a lot of houses there.
Oh, Lord.
The bus come right, we only had walk a block to the bus,
uh-huh.
to the streetcar,
yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And, but it struck me so much when I went to a store in Norway, before I went to America, I bought two apples in a bag, and they cost what it would be here, almost a dollar. For two big apples. I come to this to store here, I bought I bought for $1 worth of apple. I got a bag. I couldn't hardly carry it. Great big with all that apple. I couldn't believe it. That surprised me more than anything.
Yeah.
I never forgot that.
Did you think you had come to a good place?
Yeah, then? Very good place. Mm-hmm. And wherever I went, wherever I did, I loved it. I used to love this country from the beginning. So then I had to go to housework because it was hard time. There was depression.
That's right.
My husband couldn't get a job.
Well, now, where did you live then? Did you have your own
Still
place?
Still lived in Magdalena. I paid her, you know, for having taken care of my baby. And
what was Magdalena's last name then?
Krokness.
Krokness. And she's still here?
Yeah. Her husband died long before mine did. My second husband.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
you went to work? You did housework? Now,
yeah, I did
housework. How did you get into that kind of work?
In Norway, they are very, women are, everybody's very clean, very scrub a lot and wash a lot and iron a lot and are very, very clean. So that was just perfect for me. So I couldn't get anything else anyway. I couldn't speak English. So I applied for a job. Somebody got the job for me. Some they've been there a while. And I worked for Schofield. You know them?
That's a family, a Schofield?
Yeah, a wealthy family, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for them, and you won't believe this. I worked 18 hours out of 24 for 2 years.
18 hours?
18 hours
in
out
the,
of
In 20. Their home?
Yeah.
And then, but then you would go back to stay with Magdalena?
I got every third Sunday off and every Thursday after 4 in the evening.
How did you take care of your child?
Well, I didn't nurse him anymore at that time. I had to wait till after Christmas, you know, so my sister took care of him. And I paid, what I made, I paid to my sister and my husband. I had to support him too, because he couldn't find a job. It was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I got him 3 jobs. Somewhere or other, he couldn't keep him.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, anyway, we had a lot of trouble, so we divorced later on. But I tell you, when I worked for those people, they were wonderful to me, but I was supposed to work for an older couple and their daughter, but this other daughter was expecting a baby, and she stayed with them with her husband. And after she got the baby, she still stayed with them. So I worked for all of those. And
this was for Schofield still.
Yeah, and I slept we up on the attic, and the bed had a spring in it, with a hole through the mouth, so stuck up, and made a big sore on my back. I didn't even notice it.
Did you stay in their house then?
Yeah, I had to stay there, yeah.
Oh, so your baby was staying with your sister?
Yeah.
And you stayed in their house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only got off Thursday after 5 and every Thursday.
How long did that job last? You say
Well, I stayed there 2 years.
2 years.
But that was too much. They really had the best of me. The other people tell me now. Anyway.
How much did you get paid for that job? Do you remember?
$30 a month.
But what did you think? Did you think it was okay, or?
Well, I didn't think it was okay, but there was no other way. There was no other way to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave my sister the $30, and she gave some of it to my husband and the rest she kept.
What were you doing? Now let's take an average day, if you can remember, in that house. What were your duties? What did you have to do?
First, I had to make breakfast for the daughter's husband that wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. Those two made breakfast for him. And then he went, and then I had to wash the dishes, then I had to make breakfast for the other daughter, the other two daughters, and the Schofield and his wife. And then after that, I had to wash up all those dishes, and then I had to start cleaning the living room, the dining room, the kitchen. Then I went upstairs and made a bed and cleaned upstairs. And then I went down to after the daughter had the baby, I went down to the basement. No, that was in the evening. Yeah, that was getting late. I went down to the basement and washed 12 or 14 diapers every night and hung them up on the line. And that was about, I had worked 18 hours by the time I got up to the attic.
You cooked their dinner too, though?
Yeah, yeah.
What
I wasn't very good cook, though. They complained a lot and I cried a lot.
What?
Especially that daughter wasn't supposed to be there. She said, "What kind of mess did you make now?" Good thing I don't quite understand what she said, but they know that I wasn't good.
Yeah,
she say, "Look here in this book," and I couldn't very well read very good.
Yeah, how was it with your English? Was it caused?
Well, that improved pretty much, though. You know, I could read English long time before I could speak it. There's nothing to it to read it after a while. That's easy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I think I'd been there about 3.5 months and I could read a book and I could read a paper. They're very easy to learn. But to talk it, that's something else. I never really learned that right.
Did you ever go to school for your English? Or
didn't have no money.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah. So in the house there, did they try to help you learn English or?
No, they didn't care whatever they did. But then I'd been there about 2 years, then Mr. Schofield, he was a wonderful man. He told them, "No, you ladies, you're three ladies here, and this young girl is, you're working her to death. What's the matter with you? Can't you see?" He said, "Do something for her." I understood it then. Mm-hmm. I'd been there 2 years almost. So then they got a little easier, not much, but a little. But then by that time I got a better job, so
yeah.
I quit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see, what kind of things would you cook?
I had to fry steaks, which is the hardest thing there is. And I had to fry and cook liver, which is hard. And then I had to make meatballs. That I could do because I like made Norwegian meatballs. That was the easiest. And they liked that, and they liked the gravy they went with it. And then potatoes. And then the daughters, either one of them, come out and made a salad. You know, tossed salad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know nothing about that.
When you work in a house like that for people or wealthy people, what and you do all the housework and you do all the cooking, what is the woman of the household doing?
Well, in that house, they went out to lunch and clubs and different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when I got to the wealthier house, the wealthier people, they were wealthy, but not that wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
When I got the wealthier people, I worked for Beerhauser a little bit. They were wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, tell me about working for them.
Well, in Beerhauser, I didn't have to cook there. They had a cook. I used clean, dust and clean. But I used a substitute for the maid that was taking a trip to Europe. So
was that a home in Tacoma or a
yeah,
home in Lakewood?
Yeah, it was North End.
North End. Was
yeah.
that that big, big,
yeah.
big,
yeah.
big place?
Yeah, but that was easy because, in fact, he had three maids. They had a cook, and then he had me, and then he had a, what do you call it, chambermaid or something.
Mm-hmm.
That fixed their hair and do things like that. And she did a lot of things. She cleaned their bathroom and toilet.
How long were you with them?
No, I was your substitute there.
Yeah.
I worked at three months till the maid come back from Europe. They made have been there for many years. Then I worked for Dr. Who was that now? Isn't that enough about me?
No, tell me about all the different places you worked at.
Yeah, I worked for Dr. Pascoe, and that's the worst job I ever had in my life. Oh, that was a horrible job.
What was wrong there?
Oh, she was an actual, really and truly snob. Yeah, the worst kind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But before I worked for her, I worked for Dr. Lugassa's wife, and she was wonderful. You're so nice as they come. But then she died, and then I quit there because she was so nice, I couldn't stand it there, so she was gone.
Yeah.
So then I worked for Dr. Pascoe, and boy, what a difference.
Now, all of these different places you lived in,
yeah.
lived in the house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was it hard for you to be away from your baby? Or?
Yes, it was awfully hard, but I had no choice.
Yeah.
No choice whatsoever.
How long did you do housework then? Many, many years?
See, in 19... No, not very many years. In 1934, I think it was. Yeah, no. 2 years of school. It must be 1935. I started working as a janitress down in Fidelity Building. That's torn down now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a much better job. You know, we had a certain hour, and they paid us much more. And it was a hard job, but it was much nicer.
And
then I worked in the Washington Building after they tore down Fidelity Building. Then I worked in Washington Building after I was married for the second time. In the meantime, I divorced that Martin Nordstrom, and then after a while, I married Olaf Omat.
Now, how did you meet Olaf Omat?
I met him at my sister's house on a dinner party.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He was an immigrant.
But he came in long before me. He came in 1923.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I never know him in Norway.
Yeah. And he, what part of Norway did he come from?
He come from Åmot. He come from Sunnfjord.
Sunnfjord.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what year were you married then? To him.
We were married in 1936.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was? Did he have work then, or?
Yeah, he was a awfully good working man. He never was out there. Yeah, he was out there job a little bit during the hardest depression. He was the kind that always got a job, and he did an excellent job.
What kinds of work did he do, mainly?
Logger. If cutting trees down.
Oh, he was a logger.
They call him a feller. They cut the tree down. Mm-hmm. And then they have bokker, and they have different name for different work.
Now, did he have to work up in the woods and be away from the family?
Yeah, he only come home weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you were a janitress, you say? And
yeah, and I worked until... I got pregnant like you are when I quit.
How many children do you have all together now?
Three
kids. What are all
the
there?
Oldest boy was Robert.
Robert.
And then the next one was Lynn, and then it's Arthur.
Lynn?
Yeah, Lynn. She's a girl.
And Arthur.
And Arthur,
uh-huh.
He's the youngest.
Uh-huh.
He worked for the government, and Lynn, she married very, very.
Do they any of them live in Tacoma?
No. Arthur live in Seattle, that's the closest. And my older son live in San Jose, California. And my daughter live in Bakersfield, California.
Mm-hmm.
She used to live in Lincoln, Nebraska. Then her husband got promoted. He is quite a man. He is really quite a man. He got his PhD when he was not quite 29 years old. Had his name in gold on the door over in university in Seattle. He's really a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wrote all those books. He write books for the. Let's see if they are there. Yeah, those three books here.
Is his name Joseph Julian?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. He's sure is a. He's quite a man.
He's a professor.
Yeah.
He's a sociologist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Books
about sociology, and so he teaches in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He get sent all over the United States quite often, though.
Okay.
Yeah. My daughter, she after the boys, her boys now is 16 and 14 and a half. Now she works.
Mm-hmm.
She teaches the. She talk fluently Spanish. She teaches Spanish, and then she teaches. The advanced students in the university.
How many grandchildren do you have altogether?
Three.
Mm-hmm.
Robert have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do any of your children speak Norwegian, or did they pick up an interest in it?
Lynn took Norwegian in the university. She speaks fairly good, but my youngest boy speak excellent for to be a here, you know, because
mm-hmm.
he says some of the words very funny.
Did you speak Norwegian in your
For to be here, you know,
because
he says some of the words very funny.
Did you speak Norwegian in your home all during their growing up years?
Yeah, we speak Norwegian in the home when growing up years. Then I got a letter from the teacher, and it said in it, please speak English at home.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to quit it. So Robert, my oldest boy, he has forgotten the Norwegian because of that.
So for your younger two children, you spoke more English.
Yeah, but then I tried to speak Norwegian to them too, and they liked it.
Yeah. So they do still know a little bit of Norwegian.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is your time?
No, stop. In those days, do you think it was easier for men or women, the immigrants, when they first came over?
Well, we come over during the Depression. That's the trouble. It's like, we wouldn't be a good judge otherwise.
Yeah.
There was hardly no job, no work.
Yeah.
That's when they start this union, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
so it was pretty tough for everybody.
Yeah, everybody. I was glad to get housework. I was very happy to get housework.
Now, you said that when you came to this country, you liked America. You always did. And yet you came in the Depression. Were you disappointed about the conditions?
No, I wasn't. I was used to hard life. I wasn't used to anything else. I always thought what my mother said, the world don't owe you a living.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that.
Yeah.
And my mother told me always to don't buy anything that you can't afford, and just live on the money you have, and if you have to starve, starve a little.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that in my bringing up. So that was didn't bother me a bit.
Yeah. Was America much different than you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was tremendous big, and everybody was, there was more, how shall I say it, Norway in those days was more narrow-minded. America was more broad-minded. Mm-hmm. It was more easy to live here. Everything was more easy here, mm-hmm. somehow, even if you worked hard. Mm-hmm. Especially because the people, all the people were so wonderful.
What do you remember? Do you remember anything about the medical care in those days? For example, would the children get very sick? How do you think that's different from today? Was it?
Well, let's hope their parents to take care of them. If not, that was just too bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody else.
Did you have regular doctors you saw, or what if somebody got sick? What was it like?
Well, it was terrible. You know, my oldest boy, he got asthma when he was very little, very bad, and I got a doctor and. Then I couldn't afford him, so he really didn't come. So then Schofield, the man in the first place I worked, he was really a nice human person. He went and got a doctor, and by that time my husband, first husband and my little son lived alone. They were moved out from my sister because her husband thought it was too much. It shouldn't have to do it anymore. So they moved it. So we had a teeny little apartment up under the roof, hot.
Where was, what part of town was that?
That was in Norton, right, that apartment house isn't there anymore. That was right across from Cost Plus, if you know where that is in Norton. Second in...
What's down, it'd be like downtown today?
Yeah, well, no, that would be, you know where Tacoma Avenue is? Two blocks up from Tacoma Avenue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that little apartment, oh, it was terrible. That was the, even in Norway had it better than that. And then my son was very, very, very sick. So Schofield went and told the doctor to go up and take care of him and be sure that he did take care of him. So that Dr. Kyle, who was very famous in those days, he went up there and gave us medicine to buy, but where could we get the money? Anyway, we got the medicine somehow, and then Schofield come down one evening to see where it was going, and he was smoking a big cigar. And Dr. Kyle happened to be there, so he took the cigar out of his mouth and threw it down. Don't you know it's a sick child here, he said. So they got enemies for life,
oh,
those two.
From that?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. But my son survived, and my first husband survived, and... I guess they were very hungry at times, because every evening after dinner, I asked if it were run down with some of the food that they needed, so Schofield gave me some more, so I brought that down to them.
Mm-hmm. Was that very far? You had to go from Schofield's down to your...
Yeah, it was about 8 blocks.
Oh, you just walked down there?
Yeah, yeah. In those days, there wasn't danger to walk in the evening. There wasn't like now. There was no danger.
What do you remember? What when you had your next two children? Was it? Did you go to the hospital? Was
I went to St. Joe, and then my husband. At that time, it was that wasn't hard. Yeah. It wasn't hard up then.
Yeah. Now, when you were working here in Tacoma, you were very busy with work, many hours a day. But after you got out of the housework and got into a regular job, and you were married to.
Olaf
Omot.
Yeah.
What was your social life like? Did you join the Norwegian groups or?
I didn't join them before in 1962. I were too busy with my children. I were very, very dedicated mother, as you say. I didn't believe in babysitters. Mm-hmm. So in order to make money, then I wanted some money on my own. My husband made good, but you know it takes a lot of money in those days to raise the family, me paying on the house and all. So I took children into my home here. So when my daughter first, she was still nursing. She was about 7 months old. I was still nursing her.
Mm-hmm.
They did that in those days. And then I took in children, one policeman's daughter and one gambler's daughter, not a mixer, and took care of them all night. And then took care of my own children in a day. And boy, I don't know when they slept. I can't understand it now how they could do it, but they did.
And this house is the house where you raised...
Yeah, only we remodeled quite a bit since then.
You say you've lived here since 1938. Yeah.
And this house is built in 1910. Mm-hmm. But we remodeled quite a bit, and now I'm remodeling the kitchen.
And you would be here and your husband would be up working in the woods.
Yeah. So he come home weekends, and I didn't dare babysit weekends. He wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
But he let me do it in a week.
Yeah. And so what was your social life like? Did you have contact with other people when you were a young housewife?
Yeah, my husband was a very, very social man. He invited everybody up there. I used to cook dinner in the middle of the night for about 18 to 20 people sometimes. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I used to love it.
We're just about out of tape. I'm going to switch it over. We'll go on the other side.
Yeah.
Now, when you would have all these people in, most of the friends of you and your husband, were they Norwegian people?
Yeah, mostly Norwegians. And my husband was very well liked, and I loved social life. I always have. And so I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot to tell you all the thing I did in Norway in social life.
What? Just can you go back briefly?
Yeah. When I was 14, I belonged to what I here would call acrobatic club. It was a turn club, and we went from little cities to little hamlets and showed off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to be good. Then I also in Norway had the Laker ring. I mean, we danced. We had a teacher from Oslo. He was very, very good. He taught us.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he took kind of a liking to me because he danced always when it showed up. He danced with me, you know, to show them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I learned.
Now, what does Laker ring mean?
That's a play ring. It's a ring in all. That's international, you know, ring.
Mm-hmm.
So a Laker, that means love. Fun, play ring.
Uh-huh.
That's what it means.
Now, so you were quite athletic all your life, swimming between islands and acrobatics and dancing.
Yeah.
You were quite an athletic person.
Yeah, right.
And so...
And I had two deaths in Norway. My father was so athletic that he dived under boats that nobody else dared to do. That's where I got my idea about swimming and stuff from him.
Uh-huh.
Only I never saw him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I saw him probably, but I never remember him.
Right.
Of course I saw him. I was a year and a year and a half.
So it was in 1962 you joined
the Daughters of Norway.
Daughters of Norway. Now what led to that joining that? Did your husband belong to the Sons of Norway or?
He belongs to the Sons of Norway when he first came, I guess, and somewhere or other a whole bunch of lager got their feelings got hurt for something. I don't know, forgot what it was, so they all quit. And he never joined again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was. Anyway,
you joined?
Yeah, the daughters. Yeah, I joined the sons later.
Mm-hmm.
But I joined the daughters in 62.
Mm-hmm.
And in October, I think it was.
And what types of activities have you taken part in?
Not much. I'm not a cook. I'm a very lousy cook. Being a Norwegian, I think I'm a lousy cook. I'm not a good baker and stuff. So I didn't do much in the kitchen. I helped a little here and there. But eventually, they asked me to be an inner guard. So I was there for a while.
Now what does that mean?
I sit inside the door and watch everybody come in and out and see that nobody come in that isn't supposed to be there.
Oh.
And then later on, I got to be a trustee, which is more important.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for, I think it's 3 years. Yeah, 3 years. And that's just about all the office I've been in there.
But now you're active in the Lekering again.
Yeah, that is alone. That's something else again.
Yes, okay. Well, tell me all about your Lekering activity now. When it started and how you got started and...
Yeah, I can't remember exactly when we started. There were some old-timers, and I think that was in 1975, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we had those old-fashioned dresses on those from old time, you know. we were celebrating it, that was 150 years of Norwegian something or other. I forgot where it was now. We had, you know, those dresses they used to have in 1976 for the all of America.
For the bicentennial?
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of pioneer style
dresses?
Yeah,
we had the pioneer dresses on. And we danced like that. And we danced for Kiwani out in Puyallup. And we danced for that Dick Weeks thing out there, whatever that was. I forgot.
Were you the leader of the dancing group?
Not that time. But then it was kind of quiet, and then Maria Berglund, I don't know if you know her, she's a very old-timer, she asked the lodge if Sigurda couldn't start the Laika ring. So I did, and since then we kind of grew and got more and more. To begin with, I almost had to lay on my knee and beg them to join, and they put up their nose, what was that? But now they all want to join, and now I don't take in more than I can.
How many people do you have now?
20 when they all are there, but
20 women.
Yeah, but when half of the time, some of them are sick, or some of them are there, or some of them in Europe. So
are these mostly
16 is what usually showed up in a
yeah.
different time, different girls.
Elderly women are they?
Mostly young married women. There is, the old timer. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 old timers. The rest is younger,
mm-hmm.
young married women, mostly, and 2 young girls.
How often do you meet?
Every Monday night at 7 o'clock. And now they try to get out of it, only come a couple of times a month. And I think I have to tell them that they can't do that, they have to come every Monday night.
Where do you meet?
Down at Norman Hall.
You meet at Norman Hall?
Yeah, yeah. And now I'm going to start something new. I'm going to start the Hambo ring, and I want men to join it, and it's awfully hard to get men.
You're going to start just especially for Hambo dancing?
Yeah, not only Hambo, but the dancing with men in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the old, yeah.
Yeah, the old time.
Waltz and
yeah,
so on.
Yeah, so, but to get the men, that's the hard time. Have you got any out from PLU?
Are you going to, is this starting?
You have to start crawling again, I guess.
This dancing group you want to start this fall?
Yeah. As soon as possible.
Uh-huh. Do you have very many people signed up for that?
I got 3 girls and just 1 boy so far.
And you will teach the dances to the people?
Well, I teach that free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What night will that be at Normana Hall?
I don't know yet. It all depends on where most of them can join.
Yeah.
A married couple usually is pretty good in that.
Yeah.
They come together.
Uh-huh.
Young married. They have to be young because the men have to lift the woman up in the air.
So. Now, when you tell me, does your Laika ring perform around?
Yeah, we perform an awful lot. I'm very aggressive. So, we danced out of PLU 2-3 years after each other, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we danced for the Piala Fair 4 years after each other now. And we dance for Ballet Tacoma, and we dance for Pierce County Fair,
mm-hmm.
and we dance for churches. Different churches have danced down in their recreation rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to dance for Hope Lutheran Church pretty soon. I don't know, we haven't been there. And we dance for Lutheran Home, and we dance for Harbor View apartment house down there, and
so you're very active.
Oh yeah, I can't remember all. And then we were invited to McCord Fee Officers Club, but I don't know when they're going to go there.
When you dance, do you wear your bunads?
This one, yeah.
Yeah.
This is not bunad. This is national.
National.
And I'll explain that to you.
How is that different from a bunad?
I'll explain that to you. The Congress, the Storting in Norway. That's the Congress. They decided to have one custom for all of Norway, because all the bunad are from different dales and different countries, different counties and all over. So they decided to have one bunad for the whole Norway, that would say Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked them all over, and they judged them and decided this was the most beautiful of all of them. Because no other, not the Danish, not the Swedish, not the Icelandic, and nobody else had a beaded mm-hmm. chest piece, we call it bröstduk. And nobody else have the kind of ribbon around and stuff like that. And nobody else have Hardanger seen always. So they decided that the Hardanger tract, the Hardanger Buna, was the most beautiful of all the Norwegian Buna. So they decided that this was going to be Norway's national tract. So that's what it is.
So do very many people...
And trying to explain it to everybody, I call it Buna. They tell them that it's not the Buna.
Yes. Uh-huh. Now, so you have a Bunad also, though.
No.
Do you have a Bunad? No. This is your Bunad.
Yeah.
This is your national.
Yeah, I could have gotten a Bunad, but I didn't want it.
Yeah.
They cost too much anyway. This cost even more.
They're very expensive, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but most of the Norwegian women in this area, they have their regional Bunads.
Yeah, but those that's in my Laker ring, they have to have the national. They don't take in Bunad.
Oh, so you all dance in the national.
Yeah, of course this is a little more elaborate than an ordinary one, but they all have to have national. And I'll show you the cape that goes with it. This goes with the national.
That's the national cap. It's all beaded, isn't it?
Oops.
Got it? Now, was this made in Norway?
Yeah. I made it.
You made this?
Yeah. That was before my eyes got so poor. I can't sew now.
Did you do the work on your dress, too? Did you do the bead work on your dress?
No, this I bought here. My breast, you know, I've been dancing so much, they wear out.
Oh, really?
So I had to have a new one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
This must have taken a long time to sew all the beads onto this cap.
Yeah.
But this is traditional, the way it would be in Norway.
Yeah. That's, and the ribbon is supposed to be iron. It's all messy.
That's very pretty.
The ribbon is supposed to be iron.
What other kinds of activities?
And this is not original. They send it to me from Norway,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think that is a Norwegian. I think it is. They didn't say anything, but they don't look like a Norwegian to me.
This is a little bag to go on the side.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it really don't look like a Norwegian to me, so I can't say anything about it, but it doesn't click with my education about Norway.
Yeah. So now you're very active in the dancing and you want to start another dance group this fall. Do you have other hobbies and activities?
Yes, I do a lot of painting and I do a lot of poem writing. What is my biggest pride is my immigrant woman. Have you heard that one?
No.
I have it on a tape, but I don't know how to work my tape. Would you want to hear it?
Okay, fine.
And I also have the song. I think I have the song here, too.
Now, you wrote a poem?
I wrote it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let's see. I read a lot of poems.
Uh-huh.
I got my name in the big book for poems. You know.
Thank you. Will you read this though first for the tape here? You can read this and then I'll take it along.
You don't want me to play it then?
Why, if you can.
Yeah, but how can you get it in there by playing it over there?
Why don't you just read it this time, the words that you wrote?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you make up the music too?
No, Professor Malmin, he used to go to PLU. He uh-huh. made up the music.
Well, you read the words that you wrote.
Yeah, I'm going to read the whole thing then. Words by Sigurda Amort, the immigrant woman, music by Gunnar Malmin.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta get my glasses though. Yeah, I can make it, I think. We come to this land of honey and cream, with very little money and great big dreams. We did our best in the great Northwest, worked long and hard, with very little rest. Dreamed of Norway, fjords and valleys, land of the midnight soul. Norway, fjords and valleys, land of the midnight soul. We came of a clean and healthy stock, clear of mind, and good strong back. Some married good, some married bad. We all did the best with what we had. Dreamed of Norway, fjords and valleys, land of the midnight sun. Norway, fjords and valleys, land of the midnight sun. We worked for hours at the spinning wheel. We weaved and knitted till the baby squealed. We tended our flock, scrubbed every valley and nook, were said to be very, very good cooks. Dreamed of Norway, fjords and valleys, land of the midnight sun. Dreamed of Norway, fjords and valleys, land of the midnight sun. The emigrant's dream didn't always come true. But America, America, we love you. This land of the free were good to me. I am forever true to thee. Dream of America, forest and meadows. Our motto, in God we trust. America, forest and meadows. Our motto, in God we trust.
That's very good. Thank you.
I got the copyright for that one.
Oh, you did. When did you
write? They had to buy the copyright before they can make it into anything.
Right. When did you write this?
Oh, I wrote that, it must be 5-6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I read a lot of poems. Mm-hmm. I read A Prayer for America, which I'm proud of. That is in the White House.
It is.
Yeah. I have that here, too. You want me to?
It's in the White House?
Yeah. That's in the White House. They thanked me for it, too.
Did you mail it to the president?
Yeah. I mailed it to the vice president. He's Norwegian.
Oh, was that Mondale?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see where that. Is this it? No. That has to be there.
When did you start your writing?
Oh, yeah, as a little girl.
You've always been writing,
uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of Norwegian things, too. Well, here it is, the prayer. I'm just going to read that, too.
Yes.
Yeah. By Sigurd Aamodt, A Prayer for America. May your soil be rich and fertile. May your crop be plentiful. May the mountains in their splendor, hovering in the sunset gold. And the lake and stream sparkle with water crystal clear. May the people thank the Creator for the happy home they share. May the fish run up the streams and the wildlife thrive on your land. And the people have their dreams and your constitution rule the land. Hear the voices through the edges say, one law for all, rich and poor. Precious divinity, protect us in all eternity. Amen. You can hear that too.
Thank you.
Yeah, that one is in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
She sent me a letter and said that was in the file where they have all their precious memories and
yes,
things.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. I'm proud of that. I'm really proud of that.
Now, since we were just talking about A Prayer, have you been active in church life down through the years?
I'm not religious.
You're not religious?
I don't believe in God. I believe in the Creator. Mm-hmm. I do not believe in God. That's discrimination. See, we have the Judaism, we have the Buddhism, we have the Islams, we have the Christianity, and we have one more, I forgot which one is that, and that's discrimination to them, for the Christian, they talk about God all the time, like he's the only thing. They are just as much right to their belief as Christian have today. The closest to me, my belief, is the Indians' belief. I admire that.
Yes. What is it about the Indians' belief that you...
They believe in the great white creator, and that's what I do. I believe if you do right, think right, don't hurt animals and don't hurt people and don't gossip, try to do your best, then you are a Christian. Then you are one that deserves to live on earth.
Mm-hmm. Now, many of your Scandinavian friends are probably quite religious as far as being Christian and Lutheran.
They don't think much about me. No, yeah, they are. They're mostly Lutheran.
Do they disagree with you? Have you ever had discussions about that?
Oh, a lot of times. But they don't stop in my religion. I talked to Pastor Riedahl. I told him, I respect your belief. I really respect everybody's belief, but it isn't mine. I told him what mine were. He looked so surprised. I say, well, that's just the way I believe. I say, I believe in the creator of all earths. It's not only one earth. I told him, it's thousands of earths just like ours floating around in the universe.
Yes.
He looked so surprised. But I said, told him, hey, I respect your belief. I respect your, I respect everybody's belief.
Yes.
Everybody have a right to do.
Yes. Now, you say you have revisited Norway once.
Yeah, in 55.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. When I come to Norway in 55, so many things were changed. I couldn't believe it. And that was in 55. And all people were so glad to see me, my relatives and all them. But otherwise, I thought the rest of the people were very stuck up. They walked on the street of Bergen. They didn't even say hello when they went by. Here they do, you know. And but they were snobbish.
Mm.
And I didn't get a great admiration for them when I come back to Norway. I thought, of course, my relatives, and they were wonderful.
Now, which relatives did you visit? Who do you still know?
My sister in Norway and her children, and my uncle and aunts in Norway, and all those people in Sunfjord, which would make 8 different families, a lot of people.
Did you go with your husband?
No, he had to stay here.
You went alone?
Somebody had to stay in the house all the time.
Yeah.
I took my youngest son with.
Oh.
He was 11 at that time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do you still have contact with your family in Norway?
Yeah, I got 8 letters to answer now. I'm behind in letter writing, and I get an awful lot of letters.
Do you write in Norwegian?
Yeah. And I get 100 Christmas cards every Christmas, which is a very expensive thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
you get cards from Norway?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then I get about 100 from me. I get 200 Christmas cards every year, and that is so expensive because I have to send all that back.
Yeah.
I wish there wasn't so much of that.
Yeah. How long were you in Norway? In 1955?
Over 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you were there, apart from the way you thought the people acted, how did it feel to be back in those surroundings?
Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. But something changed where I lived most of my youth.
Was the house still there where you lived as a child? Or?
Yeah, the house was still there then, but that isn't there now anymore, they say.
Oh.
And my mother was living then. She died. And
do you hope to go back to Norway again?
Can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to, but I can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I sell a few of my paintings.
Yeah. Oh yes, your paintings. These look like real authentic Norwegian paintings. Why don't you describe what this picture is all about?
Well, this used 3 girls. Merit, Migden, and Sigden. That's a yard of roses.
Uh-huh. Now, is this, they're wearing bunads, aren't they?
Yeah.
In that
National.
Picture? National.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
National, no bunad. Here is, you wouldn't believe this, but you know, you got to remember, Norway is a small country, just like one state. So everybody can go direct back to there. So our Viking relation, we are in straight line with that baby there. He is Harald Haraldsson.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I think it says in the back. Yeah, it says King Harald Haraldsson. That was in 1204.
To 1263.
Yeah, and the danger of...
endangered by evil war, when he was only an infant of 2, was saved by 2 followers. What's that say? Those are the men's names.
Yeah.
These men's names, Thorstein Skevla and Skervald Skrukra?
Yeah.
Skruka, who concealed the child in their clothing in the bitter cold of a severe winter and carried him 230 miles on skis. My goodness, and that's a true story.
Yeah, that's they went across to Sweden.
And
to
you painted
that,
yes.
Save the king.
Oh, that's quite
he got to be a king.
And that's quite a painting.
Yeah, and that is my, it's supposed to be the straight line from him.
Oh, from in your family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On my mother's side. They are You know, the Vikings had several wives, not only one. Mm-hmm. So we don't know which wife first.
So the Norwegians were skiing even way back in those days.
Oh, they were very early in skiing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever had any of your family from Norway come over here to visit you?
Oh, yes. Lots of them. Mm-hmm. And they love it here. They used to love America. Mm-hmm. Just like I do.
When, have they visited recently?
Yeah, last year they visited. My husband was a busy, you know, he always had a yard perfect. That isn't like that now. He was a perfectionist, and the yard was just beautiful. He was proud of it. He worked too hard. They come visiting him, 6 of them. Mm-hmm. And he worked too hard. He fainted and had to take him to the hospital. And he got a little better, got home again, and was happy about getting home. And then he went out in the yard for something. He fainted again. He had to take him to the hospital again. And in the meantime, the visitors come. Mm-hmm. And I think that really killed him. Anyway, he come home again, but he was very, very, very sick. And the visitors were here, and then they left, and he lived about 5 days longer than that.
Was that several years ago? Or?
That was in 1980.
Oh, just last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had been dead a little bit more than a year now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you, would you be able to say anything in Norwegian for the tape, a prayer or a song or an expression, something you like to say in Norwegian? Can you think of anything to, so we can hear you speak a little bit of Norwegian?
Yeah. I got so many things I want to reach when I should say.
Just some little something that you like to say.
Shall I say a song?
Sure.
All right. 17 maj är jag så glad i morgon vi har från morgon till kväll. Da er det så du, om vi er små du, er vi med allikevel. Jeg roper høre dagen så lang, synger for Norge mangen en sang. Jeg også kan du elske mitt land, du, det skal du få se en gang. Maybe that's...
That's pretty.
That's
yeah.
Not. And more of it, but...
What's that song about?
17th of May.
Oh, yeah. Is that a big day for Norwegians?
Yeah.
Is that a big day for you?
Yeah, it is.
What do you do on that day?
Yeah, that day we go down to the daughters and they have a big doing there. And they say something that our teacher didn't teach us when we were small. He taught us that we celebrated the 17th of May because we were free from Sweden. Mm-hmm. So we celebrated our freedom. Now they say, especially down to the daughters and so on, they say that that is a Constitution Day, which it is not. Mm. But that's what they say.
Mm-hmm. What other days are big holidays for Norwegian people?
We have Jonsok or Sankt Hans, the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Then we they have big fire. They pile up woods and build it up high, mm-hmm. and set it on fire on the shore, and then we dance around it. Where I come from, we made, that's young people that do this, and the old people come along too and celebrate. Whenever young home, we took a lot of wood, all the young people, 14 or 15, got together, and, you know, got a lot of wood and put it in a boat and rowed out to the island where I swim, I told you about. Mm-hmm. And we come there, we build a big high thing of wood, and they had old boat once in a while. Then we put a fire, and then we danced around it. Mm-hmm. We danced waltz and hambo and polka and shardas, and had a one that played accordion. And
you had live music there.
Yeah.
What time of year is that special thing?
That is the 23rd of, what is it now? Sure.
Summer, winter?
23rd of June, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you too about when you perform in your Leikering, how do you get your music? Do you have records or do you have somebody play?
We have Pearl Christofferson. She's a piano player and accordion player. She's an excellent musician. She plays for us. Uh-huh. But we figure if we can't have her anymore, when she quit, then we'll have to have a record player. She's excellent.
Do you dance yourself in the group?
Well, I dance mostly in here. I try the dances out with an imaginary partner to see what it works out like, and then I teach it to them.
Yeah. But when you perform, do you perform too with the group?
No, right or not, I like to show off the group. So I dance inside the group, though, inside the ring.
Oh, uh-huh.
I do a lot of that, and I do a lot of kind of a little bit of acting, you know, yeah. Going with the dance.
Yeah.
I actually dance in the ring, but I don't want to show off. I want the dancing group to be the thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they did that.
Did you used to get stories from passed down from one person to another?
Yeah, well, they tell. Well, I forgot what I told her now. Anyway, like for instance...
The tradition that comes down through people telling people things.
Yeah. Somewhere my mind go blank. You want to know what the Viking did, maybe? Okay.
Did you learn about the Vikings when you were young?
I studied the Vikings all the time. I'm very much interested in that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the Vikings... there was a Viking they called Erik Blodaux. That means the bloody Erik. He killed, and then he happened to make a killing, so he got fredlaus, you say. He had to leave Norway. They didn't want him anymore because he had killed this mighty Viking for no reason, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So he went. He took his family, and they had those big. Seats, they call it, where the Viking was sitting there, högsäte.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be in American? I don't know. Högsäte, that means the most important seat. Högsäte. He took the poles that hold that chair in one boat with him, and then all the family and animals in some other boats, and they went out from Norway. And when they come in the middle of the North Sea or farther up, closer to Iceland, he threw the two poles out in the water, and he said, well, those land, we are going to live. Then they come to Iceland, and they build a home there and everything. Then later on, after a couple of years, they find the poles laying in the water right outside of a place, and they start calling that Reykjavik. And there's where Iceland got their mm-hmm. capital city, Reykjavik.
Mm-hmm. No.
And he... He raised the family there and everything, and he was a very restless never liked to stay in one place long. So then he went to Greenland. He took some of his family to Greenland, and there he had some family and children, and among them are Leif Erikson.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you learn about the Vikings from books or
how? Oral.
Oral,
yeah.
Who told you those stories?
My grandfather told me, his grandfather told him, and he went on from... That's why I believe more in oral as I did in the books.
You do?
Yeah. Now I'll tell you something. You know, those that dig and find things and what do you call them now again?
Archaeology?
Yeah. They are wrong so many times. I'll tell you one sample. There was a Norwegian boat with a... Olagsson, and that was on the sea between Norway and Denmark, and they drowned, and the boat were washed up on the coast of Denmark, up on the coast there, for years and years, hundreds of years, the dirt piled over it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and everything. Well, then when the Denmark digged it up, they said it was Danish, and there's one example. See, that was Norwegian. Mm-hmm. They could prove it in Norway, but they didn't bother. They never bothered to do that. But, well, there's a lot of things that go oral that I believe much more in that than I do in the other.
So these stories about the Vikings and the history have come down from great-grandfather and grandfather, and now, now is that going to change, do you think, now?
I don't know. I'll tell you other one. You know, in Greenland, the Vikings, they were Viking, they could always survive just about anything. They had a very strong constitution and very good idea about how to survive.
Mm-hmm.
They always did that. They were born with it almost. So there was a few Vikings that lived in Greenland with their families, their dogs and their horse and their goat. And Denmark seafarers come to Greenland and they wiped them out completely, children, everything. And then they told the world that there was no survivor there, there was nobody living. So Denmark took over. So when they got up to the law in that, not in the United Nations, but what do you call that one was before that? There's a name for it. Something of Legion.
The NATO.
Yeah. They decided that Denmark should have Greenland, which should really have been belongs to Norway. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you think Norway's been treated a little unfairly sometimes?
Very unfairly. See, that Greenland, that should be Norway's by all means. Uh-huh. Yeah, but the Denmark said there was no survivor there, but they were lying. So that also went in oral. Come back with a fisherman to Iceland, from Iceland to Norway.
Yeah.
So they know about, like, gossip rules around, you know.
Now, will these stories keep being passed down orally, or do you think it's going to change now?
I think they changed so much in 1930 that Norway isn't Norway anymore. Mm-hmm. It's so different.
What's different about it?
I don't know. They don't keep up those. They don't get the oral stories anymore.
Mm-hmm,
or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's the way you've learned a lot of history.
Yeah, I learned a lot of history that way.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. So.
So, let me see if we've talked just about everything. I think. Did you?
I was going to tell you one more thing.
Okay.
Leif Erikson was not a nice, sweet man that liked to be quiet and everything. He was very brutal, very fiendish, very hard. He liked to fight.
Oh yeah.
And he had a wife even worse than him. She pushed him on and pushed him on. So he was not that good, sweet man they tried to make him now. He was a warrior of the worst kind.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's a very famous Norwegian.
Yeah, he is. Then we had Fridtjof Nansen and Roald Amundsen, very famous Norwegians.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it is about the Norwegians that they were such famous explorers and adventurers? Do you have an idea about that?
Yeah, I think it was because they were restless. Here is what we learned when Norway come about. You know, there was the ice age. Every country in all of Europe was frozen over. There was no country. And then the Gulf Stream went by Norway's coast, that warm stream. And there started to be green edges and green woods and green all over on the shoreline there.
Mm-hmm.
And the animals come from, I don't know where they come from. And then two families from Germany with many kids each, they start walking across the ice. They were trying to find a place where they could have a survival. They walked and walked for years and years. They've come up to this green coast, settled down, and raised their family and married and multiplied. There's a Norway come about.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitler believed this because he had his weakness for Norway. He told him not to go too rough on Norway, but they did anyway. But he was so bad as he was very intelligent in lots of ways. Mm-hmm. And he knew about this. And
So the original Norwegians were of German stock, you
yeah.
say?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's a long, long time ago.
That's under the Ice Age.
Yeah.
That's a long time
ago. What makes the Norwegians so restless, do you think?
That is what makes them restless, I think. They were nomadic to begin with. And
nomadic people?
Yeah, I
mm-hmm.
think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they always like to better themselves, like you would say. That is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking for a better place.
Yeah.
Well, are you glad that you immigrated to the United States?
Very glad. I love this country.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing this country can do will make my change my mind.
But how is your Norwegian heritage important to you? Is it important to you?
Yeah, that is important to me. I'm very proud of being of Viking blood. Very proud of that. And I'm proud of my heritage every way, in every which way. But I figure this way, America is my adopted mother, and I'm going to stick with America and whatever happened. You know, if we were in war with Norway, of course I would stick up for America. I promised that, I pledged that when I got my citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And when I promise something, I live up to it.
Yeah.
I think that's typical Norwegian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Typical American too.
Anything else you'd like to add before we finish? Say goodbye in Norwegian, maybe?
Yeah. Farvel and tusen takk.
Yeah.